Support for this podcast comes from Avangrid. Tom Turnwald runs an Ohio millwork company that was started by his father and employs his kids.
I'm in favor of wind farms because I'm committed to attracting talent to our community, and the school districts with wind turbines get resources that can make a huge difference in kids' lives.
Since 2012, an Avangrid wind farm has strengthened the economy and contributes millions to the community each year. To learn more about where energy meets humanity, visit avangrid.com. That's avangrid.com.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, Steve Bannon has declared war on the Republican Party. He may be out of the White House, but that, he says, only makes him stronger. His battle plan for the soul of America. It's Friday, November 10th.
Well, here you are, behind enemy lines.
Yes.
Headquarters of the opposition party.
Yeah, good to see
you. I don't think I expected to see this.
No. I'm sure I'll get some blowback on the pages of Breitbart in the comment section. I'm sure I'll hear about it.
Is it what you expected?
Jeremy Peters, why is Steve Bannon so significant at this moment?
This is the man who led the Trump campaign to victory. Now he's waging his own war on the Republican Party to defeat and displace as many sitting Republican senators as he can, who he views as too cozy with the political establishment. Now, the outcome of that fight, whether or not a Bannonite wing, if you want to call that, in the party emerges, I think answers the question of whether or not the American two-party political system as we know it is blown apart. So love him or hate him, there are few people as central to American politics right now as Steve Bannon.
You know, I was very upfront when I left the White House. I thought the Republican establishment was thwarting the president's agenda. In fact, I was very upfront. I said it's almost like nullification. They're trying to nullify the 2016 election.
So why does it have to be a war?
They're just not going to turn over power to you. You just go in and say, hey, we have a better idea. We have better ways we want to run things. We're just not going to kind of give it to you. So, you know, if you've seen what Mitch McConnell and I have been going after each other, his henchmen have been going after me, and I've said some very unpleasant things about Mitch McConnell, not personal things, but professional things. It's a war of words, a war of ideas. Does that make sense as far as its definition?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've heard you describe it a few different ways. It's a war. It's a revolution. Yeah.
Yes.
It could be a civil war within the Republican Party.
It is all that. It is, I think, a revolutionary movement or a reform movement or a civil war or war. Some of the rhetoric gets a little heated because I think also it helps to have a sense of drama of this, that these are big historical moments. And this is a very big historical moment. And you're seeing the exact same thing on the left. And because the left does not have a Breitbart, does not really have a news organization that one of its principal focuses is turning the spotlight on the corruption and incompetence of the Democratic establishment, I think that's one of the reasons that the revolt by the Democratic left and the progressive left against the Wall Street ownership of the Democratic Party and the corruption that they have has been many years in coming. But I got to tell you, you can see it coming. It's going to be just as vitriolic because the stakes are very high. It's going to be just as vitriolic as the one on the right.
So, just in a couple of sentences.
Hold it. No, I can't.
Brevity's not exactly your thing.
Yeah.
But how will the history books describe this war?
A populist nationalist revolt against the globalist elite that ran the Republican Party and really were part of the globalist elite that runs the country. This will be looked at as a revolt of working class people of both parties, okay, at a time that really rejected the permanent political class that is inextricably linked, both Republican and Democrat in Washington, D.C., and tried to take back their government and have it more responsive to themselves.
Okay? So one is Trump's election. Is phase two the conservative populist takeover of Congress?
Yes, absolutely. It's to now start to take over these institutions. Now, why Mitch McConnell? Because the institution of the majority leader has so much power, and he has used that power to, quite frankly, thwart President Trump's agenda, right? And one of the ways they've done it, and with Paul Ryan and Senator McConnell, is they have three committees on the Hill that are investigating collusion. So you see from McConnell, it's been no support. It's been allowing these committees to go, failing miserably to get Obamacare repealed and replaced. We're yet to see what they're going to do on taxes. But this is not fundamental tax reform. I mean, it's going to be a tax cut with some tax reform, but it's certainly not what people envisioned at first. And I hold that to Mitch McConnell.
So that's his greatest offense, is not supporting the president enough.
The greatest offense is not supporting the president enough as of now. Mitch McConnell has to go.
Do you think Mitch McConnell will be majority leader at this time next year?
I absolutely do not think he will be majority leader.
Is that your personal mission, to make that not happen?
It's not my personal mission, but I have an objective that Mitch McConnell would not be majority leader, and I believe will be done before this time next year.
So I know you watched that Jeff Flake speech, and I wonder what you thought when you listened to him denounce the president and say, our children are watching, what will we tell them if we don't speak up now? I think some people saw that as a man speaking truth to power. That's something I think you understand.
Yeah, I don't know that, but give me a break. What his children are looking at is a country that Flake was one of the guys that looked the other way and allowed this country to start to lose its sovereignty by unlimited illegal immigration, and particularly in the state of Arizona. What they're looking at is lack of job opportunities because we have shipped all the manufacturing jobs virtually in this country to China. That's what Jeff Flake was wrong. So when these guys get all high and mighty, and I see what Donald Trump has said and how he represents working class people and how he's trying to make their lives better, Jeff Flake is a total, incomplete phony, okay? Everything he says, everything he does. I have absolutely zero respect for him. And if he's such a big shot, tell him to unstep down and run against Kelly Ward in a primary. Let's see what the people of Arizona have to say. Let's see what his constituencies have to say about him. Go back to Arizona and convince the citizens of Arizona that you stand for something.
Trump doesn't always agree on everything. He doesn't agree on everything with you. So now Trump is in this
interesting
position.
Trump
is in this interesting position. He was the ultimate outsider.
Yes.
He captured the presidency.
Yes.
Now he's on the inside.
Yes.
So is he an agent of yours in this war, or is he an enemy, or is he both?
No, he's the leader of this movement. He's embodied, because if you go back and look at him over the last 25 or 30 years, I mean, he has preached this, you know, day in and day out. So he embodies it. He's also a charismatic leader. Somebody galvanizes people. Remember, I think it was in the Washington Post that said about a month ago, I'm the only person in the inner circle of Trump that truly believes he's a global revolutionary figure. And he is. I believe in his greatness. Donald Trump has greatness within him. If he just sticks to his plan, if he just sticks to what he promised the American people, if he sticks to that, he's going to have to walk through fire, right? There's going to be a lot of bad days. And there'll be more bad days than there are good days. But at the end of it, he's going to win re-election with 400 electoral votes. And he'll be considered in the pantheon of Reagan and Lincoln and others as great president. But you have to stick with the program.
Well, you know better than anyone. You worked with him. You had to corral him. You had to keep him disciplined and on message. This is not an easy thing to do. How does he stick to the program?
Look, I didn't have to corral him. He's actually a very self-disciplined. The media doesn't give him credit. To run that kind of campaign let me say something else. He understands mass communications to the populace much more sophisticated than I do. And I think I'm pretty good. I'm a junior varsity compared to him. He did things in the campaign. He'll do things on either Twitter or the way he phrases things or the way he wants to see things.
So this is part of a master plan. It's not impetuous.
I think that, you know, certainly as he has different voices around him. And I think one of the struggles we've had in the administration and one of the struggles he will have going forward is that there's one school of thought that says, yes, the program you laid out to the American people is a program of disruption. It is to go after certain central institutions in American life to change them so that they work better for the working men and women in this country, working class and middle class, and eventually work better for the country itself, okay? And it's not that we're going to be isolationists. It's not that we're going to be, you know, detached from the world. It's not that you're going to be some ethno-nationalist country. It's the exact opposite. But you're going to have to take on the establishment every day. And they're not going to give up their power easily. Okay, but that path is very torturous. Mm-hmm. It's very tough. You have to fight every day. You have to take on the swamp, right? And the swamp's some cute thing we've got for it, but this inextricably linked power structure of the permanent political class, which is not going to give up their power easily because it's a great business model they have. If you do that, you're going to have some bumpy roads, but there's sunlit uplands on the other side of that. You have that's a great. Now, there's others who say you have to moderate. You have to try to bring people together.
People in the administration that you had some very strong differences with.
You will be liked, right? My thing is, do you want popularity now or do you want to be loved? You want to be beloved in history by your country because you did the right thing. Trump viscerally connects with a large part of the American population, just like President Obama did connect with a large part of the American population.
But for the longevity of your movement, for the survival of it, you can't replicate Trump.
I know.
So
you
what
can't
do you do? What do you do without him when he's
you
gone?
You have to build institutions. Look, we're trying to get think tanks built. The first thing is doing is almost the institutionalization of this coalition of all these various grassroots groups to actually get now engaged in vetting candidates, right? To vet candidates for the Senate. To look at how they put together a grassroots army. Maybe they work collectively. The institutions of this have to be built. And you're absolutely correct. Donald Trump will sometime leave the battlefield. I think he'll leave it at the end of his second term. He may stay on as the head of this movement after that. But there is some point in time that Donald Trump, you know, is not the person. And by the way, the Democrats had the same problem after Obama. Guys like Barack Obama, guys like Donald Trump, they come along once in a generation.
Aware of this caricature that exists of you in the media. I wonder if you
What do you mean caricature?
I'm thinking the Grim Reaper mask on Saturday Night Live.
Let's go back to the first one because
you don't really dress like that, I know. But how do you think the liberal media sees you?
Well, you see, I think it's interesting because I was basically virtually unknown outside of relatively small part of the conservative movement.
And right? Now people are dressing up as you for Halloween.
Yeah, well, you've
gone from being totally anonymous to being a Halloween costume.
But remember,
what is that like? How do you process that?
I don't even think about it. Have I changed in the time you've known me? Right. No, the only thing I do is I don't wear shorts as much as I used to. I think I knew you for a year and I never wore long pants in the time. No. So I don't care what they say. I really don't care. It doesn't matter. People can say anything. They can write anything. They can do
because
anything.
Because you know how you're portrayed. You're very self-aware. You are seen by a lot of people on the left as the white nationalist, as the nativist. Does that bother you?
Our program is so different than that. I think it's actually a power as we power through it. And here's why. I'm called an anti-Semite. If you talk to the ambassador of Israel, he says the most pro-Israel guy in the White House, Steve Bannon, second to none. I set up Breitbart Jerusalem. So the thing is so ridiculous that as the facts come out, it actually makes you, it actually.
Okay,
sure.
What? I don't know what the hell that was.
They obviously didn't like the answer. No. So if you power through it, it's just like the white national stuff. Nothing can be further. You know, I've condemned this on Charlie Rose. I've condemned the pages of Breitbart. Ethno-nationalism is ridiculous, right? It's absurd. The guys there are, quite frankly, creatures of the mainstream media and the left media. There's a handful of them. Nobody takes them seriously, right? Because they can't be taken seriously. They're not serious people. The economic nationalism, right? And particularly as these ideas get out and people understand it, is the thing that binds us together. What do I mean by that? It doesn't matter what your race is, what your ethnicity is, what your color is, what your religion is, what your gender is, or what your sexual preference is. What it matters is that you're a citizen of the United States of America, right? You should get a priority, right? You shouldn't be the last guy in line, and you shouldn't be paying for everything else, right? That, you know, trade and illegal immigration are just two sides of the same coin. The unfair trade deals are just having unfair competition by foreign labor against American working men and women. And illegal immigration is just letting the foreign workers in the country.
But
that's why
the
people have been most affected negatively by globalism in this country are the working class Hispanics and blacks in this country, which really have taken opportunities away. That is why Trump's economic nationalist program of trying to stop illegal immigration, but more importantly, tell country to signal to countries overseas, there's going to be tariffs and there's going to be quotas, right? Unless you start to make your stuff here, and you're seeing business investment, what, up 10%? And you're starting to see foreign business investment up because people want to get here in the United States.
But if there's a certain segment of the population, and not an insignificant one, that sees that agenda as white nationalist, that sees the president picking fights with black NFL players and saying, don't tear down these Confederate monuments, how is that not detrimental?
Actions speak louder than words. You know, you can't wish that away because the opposition party is not going to let you wish it away. It is a way to smear somebody, and it's a fear tactic. The only way you get over the fear tactic is you have results. Mm-hmm. If you start bringing jobs back to the Midwest, if you stop illegal immigration, and the black working class and Hispanic working class, and I've said this from day one in our movement, when we get to 25 and 30% of the black working class and Hispanic working class and the black middle class and Hispanic middle class voting for us, we will have a realignment like 1932. And so there's nothing to stop us from doing that except getting in policies to support these people.
How do you get there, though, if so many of those people, minorities, Hispanics, blacks, you as a white nationalist?
But you have to continue to win elections. You have to continue to implement your policies.
And what do you
think? By the way, I don't think you can sit there and talk your way through this. You just have to show people every day the actions. We have to change the system. We have to go in and get these trade deals to start to take care of the American worker, not just the American company, the American worker.
Okay.
And that's one of the things we're going to have to do. And by the way, I know we're going to do it over time.
So there's no doubt, though, that that message of President Trump's has appeal with white nationalists.
Absolutely.
Is that an unfortunate reality, an unintended consequence?
I think it's nonsense. I think it's nonsense.
You don't think he appeals to them at all?
I think these guys grab onto anything they can. No, the message is one of, this is the guy, the least racist guy I've ever met, and nothing in the campaign, and nothing that he's done to date. That's all left-wing. That's MSNBC nonsense. And by the way, you can't help but a couple of, these guys are marginalia to marginalia, right? So they'll grab onto anything. And by the way, every time they say Trump's name, MSNBC's got a camera on it, and the New York Times has an article on it, right? Because you're obsessed with it.
So you think it's a media fabrication?
Absolutely, 100%. It's 100% media fabrication. And by the way, because they realize that they think the only way they can run is by smearing you to be a nativist, a misogynist, a racist, homophobe.
But they're chanting his name. They're saying, Heil Trump.
You can't help it. They're doing that because they know the mainstream media, if they sit around and do their whatever they do, nobody covers them. Right? Because nobody cares, because they don't have any meaning or purpose, okay? They're so tiny and irrelevant. As soon as they try to start bringing in the president, all of a sudden the cameras are there, CNN's there, the New York Times, there's a front page story. They play the mainstream media to build it up, and it's irrelevant nonsense. It's just something that's got to be worked through. You see this in...
Well, this all bubbled over, as you know, in the most, I think, detrimental way for the president in Charlottesville. Did he handle that right?
I think the president handled it perfectly. The thing I talked to him on Sunday, he's the first one to say, he says, where does this all end? Right? Where's this all end? Is this just going to end in taking down the Washington Monument? Is this going to end in taking down the, Mount Vernon?
Yeah, but
then President Trump was talking about, they're very fine people on both sides, was that the people that were there for their legitimate First Amendment rights to say, hey, I support the statue of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson, and hey, I think it's racist and it should come down. By the way, those people, you know where you work that out at? At the city council and the county commission and then in your governor's race, et cetera. That's the normal process of this country. Mm-hmm. It was the thugs on both sides as some of the worst element.
Here. Let's switch gears here. The Russia investigation, it sounded earlier like you said...
Are we now going into fake news?
It sounded earlier like you said that you don't think Mitch McConnell should be allowing these investigations to proceed. Do you agree with the president? Is the Russia thing just a hoax?
I think the collusion thing is, and I've said it from day one, is a joke. I was there. We couldn't collude. We had a tough time colluding between the Trump campaign in Pennsylvania and the RNC, right? I mean, all of our stuff is a ground game. So I think have some marginal guys, and there were definitely some marginal people early on in the campaign, because this thing was a shaggy dog all the way through. The campaign early on had some marginal guys, and you've seen them on TV. These guys have popped up.
Manafort wasn't marginal, though.
Manafort's stuff is financial relationships he had with who know what. I don't know about his money laundering and his tax thing, what he's been accused of. By the way, with Mueller, I've never said Mueller should be fired, okay? I'm the guy who said Comey shouldn't be fired. I do believe that Bob Mueller's investigation should have some parameters on it. If it's going to do collusion, that's fine. I also think it ought to have a duration on it. To go outside the lanes and to start to look at people's, all these financial transactions from years and years ago, no, I do not believe that is the purview of what the special counsel, special prosecutor set up. And I've been very vocal that these people, that it is incumbent upon Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell to, one, just put an end date on these things. They have to get their work done by a certain date. And if it's going to on collusion, it should start on collusion. It was
so words what, to that from your perspective, what did happen between Russia and the Trump campaign?
I have no idea. It's not relevant. It's irrelevant.
It's not Hillary relevant if crimes were committed by members of the campaign?
If anybody did anything wrong, I'm a law and order guy. If they did something wrong, they should be prosecuted for it. My point's different. They're saying the election was turned by the Russian involvement. It's BS. And I want any Democrat to sit there and tell me she can give a coherent case today why she should be president of the United States. She cannot. They tried to play up this thing to nullify President Trump's election, to nullify it. They tried to come up with this hoax that was this huge Russian involvement and Russian collusion. Yes, I think it's nonsense. I think it's been nonsense from the beginning.
But your time in the White House. Look, I mean, you are somebody who articulates a very clear vision for where this country should be going and the policies we need to implement to get us there. If you could have, would you have stayed for all 4 years of president's
term? Oh, my God, no. Not more than one. I never had – never tend to stay. Never tend to stay.
Why are you more effective? Why are you able to be more effective on the outside?
Because I get my hands on my weapons. I mean, come on. I'm much more effective. I can meet with all the grassroots groups and I can do everything I want. Remember, in the White House – you're a federal employee. You're very restricted what you do. By the way, you should be restricted. I'm not arguing that you shouldn't be. It's just you're a federal government employee. There's only a certain amount of stuff you can do. And by the way, in the White House, it's all about influence. It's all about, can you influence the president to do this? Can you influence this policy, et cetera? So it's important. But, you know, on the outside, I can have more freedom to kind of pull these things together. And I think and it's just, for me, it's so much better. I mean, look, I left the White House at noon on Friday, and I was chairing the Breitbart editorial call at 6. So it's just been every day, as they say in the Navy, every day is a holiday and every meal's a banquet. So I enjoy it so much. I enjoy what I'm doing. I've dedicated my life to build this populist nationalist movement. By the way, you're gonna have good days, you're gonna have bad days. But I absolutely am convinced that we're on the right track and we're making a big difference in the country and a big difference for the key to this movement, it's, if you go back in history, it's the American people. The American people have always made the right decision, whether it was in the Revolution, whether it was in the Civil War, whether it was in World War II or the Great Depression. And when they have full information, they ultimately make the right decision.
So how long does this war last?
The war for the Republican Party? Until we
the
take
war for the country. I think you're describing a war for the soul of the country more than the
Republican I think
Party.
It's, by the way, I think you'll see Bernie Sanders and those guys and the populist left up for it. I think this is a great fourth turning of American history, just like the other three, the Revolution, the Civil War. If you look from when these things start to when they finish, I tell people it could be 10, 15, 20 years. And if you're not committed to work as hard as you possibly work every day as a volunteer in a grassroots organization and not just think, and this is what I try to tell people, November 8th, MAGA Day, of 2016 is just another day. It's a day that we should celebrate, a day we should remember, and remember how we got there. But you're going to have to do it every day. We've got the 2018 elections, and if you're not working today, you know, you're going to be very negatively surprised. So if you want to have political control in this country, you've got to get on it every day.
Steve, thank you very much for doing this. We really appreciate it.
Jeremy, thanks, and thanks for the New York Times, the tour I had and all that. Really appreciate it. I appreciate being so kindly welcomed behind enemy lines.
That's great.
Finally got some pizzazz in this limp, you know, New York Times podcast. Bring some heat. Who's been
good.
Banging
you
on tables?
You listen to it? It's good. It's really good.
It's good. It's really good. It's really good. It's a little NPR-ish, but it's good.
On Thursday afternoon, a Senate candidate backed by Steve Bannon, Roy Moore, who recently won the Republican primary in Alabama, was accused of making sexual advances on four women when they were teenagers. One woman told the Washington Post she was 14 when Moore pursued her. Moore, the former Chief Justice of Alabama, who famously hung the Ten Commandments in his courtroom and has called homosexuality a crime against nature, was not supported by the Republican establishment in the primary. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said in a statement, quote, "If these allegations are true, he must step aside." We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by Amelia Perez, Zoe Saldana, Carla Sofia Gascon, and Selena Gomez, star in director Jacques Audiard's audacious, genre-defying movie, hailed as the year's best picture. An electrifying odyssey boasting tour de force performances, liberating song and dance, and bold visuals. The London Standard calls it a work of brilliance. Time hails it an exuberant ode to human possibility. And Vanity Fair raves, there is no other movie like Amelia Perez, a thrilling reminder of the limitless potential of this medium. On Netflix in the US, UK, and Canada.
What can a painting of Queen Elizabeth I teach us about power? And how did tattoos become both revered and reviled? Hi, I'm Isabella Rossellini, and in the first episode of This Is Not a Beauty Podcast, we'll hear from a top Capitol Hill makeup artist and meet the world's oldest tattooist to understand how beauty shapes politics. Listen now on your favorite podcast platform, brought to you by L'Oreal Group.
I use New York Times Cooking at least 3 to 4 times a week.
I love sheet pan bibimbap. It said 35 minutes. It was 35 minutes.
The cucumber salad with soy, ginger, and garlic. Oh my God, that is just to die for.
This turkey chili has over 17,000 five-star ratings. So easy, so delicious.
The instructions are so clear, so simple, and it just works.
Hey, it's Eric Kim from New York Times Cooking. Come cook with us. Go to nytcooking.com.
Here's what else you need to know today. Five women have come forward with on-the-record allegations of sexual misconduct by the comedian Louis C.K., including multiple instances in which he asked to masturbate in front of women, or did so.
How do women still go out with guys when you consider the fact that there is no greater threat to women than men? We're the number one threat to women. Globally and historically, we're the number one cause of injury and mayhem to women. We're the worst thing that ever happens to them. That's true.
You know, CK rose to fame with self-effacing commentaries on his flaws and sexual hang-ups, a riff some women feel has served as a cover for real misconduct. In an email to the Times, Louis CK's publicist wrote, quote, "Louis is not going to answer any questions." And CK did not respond to multiple messages from the Times detailing the accusations. The Daily is produced by Theo Balcom, Lindsay Garrison, Rachel Quester, Annie Brown, Andy Mills, Christopher Worth, Ike Srizkandaraja, and Claire Tennisketter, with editing help from Larissa Anderson. Lisa Tobin is our executive producer. Samantha Hennig is our editorial director. Brad Fisher is our technical manager. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. Special thanks to Peter Sale, Sam Dolnick, and Michaela Bouchard. On tomorrow's episode of The New Washington, Jeremy Peters and I talk through the Bannon interview. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you Monday.
This podcast is supported by ACLU. The ACLU knows exactly what threats a second Donald Trump term presents, and they are ready with a battle-tested playbook. The ACLU took legal action against the first Trump administration 434 times, and they will do it again to protect immigrants' rights, defend reproductive freedom, safeguard free speech, and fight for all of our fundamental civil rights. Join the ACLU today to help stop the Extreme Project 2025 agenda. Learn more at ACLU.org.